This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
5 months, no suspect name, no arrest, over 100 federal agents, and Nancy Guthrie's family is still waiting for a phone call that has not come. You guys have had a lot of questions about the Nancy Guthrie case, and you've been living inside this now almost half a year at this point. People have been looking at satellite images, time-stamping surveillance footage, building theories. You got questions. We're going to try our best to give you some sort of answers as best we can, without going down conspiracy roads too much. But we're more than welcome to examine and parse out any questions you may have. So feel free to drop them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube and Facebook and X and whatever you're watching us live on right now. And if you're watching the replay, go ahead and drop your questions too. We do read them and we can bring them up into another conversation. We're going to talk about Nancy Guthrie this morning. We're also going to be talking about Rex Heuerman, answering some of your questions there, and Mackenzie Shirilla from The Crash. So questions in any of those cases, cue them up and drop them here in the comment section. Joining me, as always, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, I've been kind of going down this rabbit hole. I think it was like Friday afternoon I texted you and Todd going, I think I know what it is, as I've done, I think, probably 10 times now in the last half a year. But I don't know, this idea, this area that we were talking about with Coffin Daffer the other day, I've been doing more research on. I feel like it may have some legs, and it may have make some sense if there's anything to be made sense of here, where so much does not. So I'm going to start introducing this with a question from a listener. It says, Nancy's neighbor has a YouTube channel where he shows a walk-in vault full of high-value gems and minerals. High-end gem dealer in the area, has been on the board. I'm just telling you what I've researched of whatever the gem group there is in the Tucson area. There was a big convention going on at the time of her disappearance. So there's a lot of people in town for this. We're talking, you know, world-class gem collecting. This isn't just some, you know, side-of-the-road gem stand or something at the checkout at the amusement park. It's a serious collecting. This is serious money in that sort of a world. And literally Nancy's neighbor. I've been saying it for a little bit. What if they went to the wrong house? What if they just simply went to the wrong house? You could literally throw a gem from Nancy's house and hit Gem Guy's house. Now, no way do I think Gem Guy has anything to do with this in terms of any culpability of Nancy disappearing, but more so, I'd be counting my lucky stars saying, I'm glad I didn't get kidnapped, because I think that this person likely had a lot more likelihood, a lot more to give up than possibly Nancy did. What if these guys showed up at the wrong door? What's your thoughts, Robin?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, Tony. And by the way, welcome to the camper again. We're on the road. So
yes.
Starlink's little, I got my Bucky shirt on because my wife said I need to do something to demonstrate I'm on the road. Yeah, I think it's got as equal legs as anything else right now. And so here's what I'm thinking. And as that, even as you're saying that, Todd, I, Tony, I thought of one more thing. And so from the very get-go, I think everyone can agree that they were going for the intent of whoever did this was to get something in this house. What's been going back and forth was what was that intended target? Was it Nancy herself or something else in that house of value? 41 minutes or 42 minutes in the house said to me and a few others, but not everyone, that they couldn't find what they're looking for, surprise, whatever it was Nancy aware, not aware, that all the parts were kind of falls apart from the initial intent. This, now them targeting gems, because remember, I actually looked up, was she known to have any jewelry that they would have had a high value on it, and it wasn't known. Again, we got to also be very careful, and that's why this is a challenge. We don't know what law enforcement knows right now, because this theory to me has as much legs right now as anything else. Where it loses me a bit is because we haven't had any leakage from anyone, neighbors, law enforcement, FBI, or anyone saying that they've followed up on this theory and debunked it or didn't do it. It's just been silence on this. But here's an interesting thing I want to add to that gives it a little bit more legs for me too. Remember, law enforcement spent a lot of time with Annie's car, Annie's house. Annie also was part of this thing that happened in that town, that jewelry convention, because Annie's also a jeweler. That's why I thought there might have been a tie to jewelry because of her. And then along. So why were they interviewing Annie so much? From my perspective, not because she was ever a suspect. Again, they put the family out first, but maybe she actually has a lot of knowledge about the people, places, and things that were going on at this jewelry thing, because they thought that might have been a target as well.
Which, if there is somebody in that world that did target the jewel guy, not Nancy, that would be the place to look, would be that community, would be that world. And it makes, I have no idea. I would assume that, I would hope that they're looking into this. I mean, there's, I mean, so much so here that, I don't have the name of the group, but it was some jewelers association that they've put up $10,000 in reward money because they were concerned that this might be in some way, shape or form connected to gems or jewelry. With the convention going on, that organization said, let's help in any way we can. $10,000 towards a reward, towards information, trying to inspire people within the gem community to come forward with any sort of information. That's not nothing.
Yeah, and I want to add a little bit more to this too, Tony, and the fact that just because we have this one theory that we're posing out there of wrong house of gems doesn't mean that it's exclusive, that the others are dismissed as well, because it could have been a very easy mindset for someone that was targeting that we're looking for blockchain because we're looking for crypto as well as gems, because a mindset would be if they have gems, they might have crypto as well. So just because we're adding something to this doesn't mean we're saying that everyone, all these other ideas are wrong or debunked or anything. It's just, I think this just adds another layer for law enforcement to make sure they're flushing out, going down and exploring this, because then there's lots of other interviews you could do. There's just a lot more you can do, because if they're targeting, because again, if you have a group of people or just one or two that are targeting this gem world, jewelry world, there might be footprints that they've done other jobs that have been similar then also around the country. So there's a lot of other things that could be followed up because of it.
I mean, I'd love to know this, and I haven't done research, and I don't know that I'm going to find this answer without reaching out to Jim Guy exactly. I'm wondering if the neighbor was even home that night. With the show going on in town, I'm wondering if, I mean, sometimes, you know, when things like that happen, if it's at a convention center, everything, you got a lot of your stuff there, you're just going to stay at the hotel right by it or whatever. Pure conjecture here, but that I do wonder if that was an empty house that night, and if whoever was showing up expected it to be an empty house that night too. That I don't know. That's a question I have. Another listener had weighed in here and said, if they realized it was the wrong house once they were inside, an 84-year-old woman, no vault, no gems. Let's say she spots them, she hears something, she gets up. I mean, what do you even do at that point? You can't just leave. She's seen you. Amy on Instagram had that one.
Well, then, you know, because then it still becomes, again, rare, but it does happen. The panic escalation was removing her, going for a secondary, even a third. Again, every time we add another layer, it becomes more complicated, and I hate complicated things because it shows that it gives more credit to the morons that are doing this than they actually deserve, not even deserve, but they actually should be even given credit for, because, and I know people keep saying, well, if he's so stupid, how come he got away with it? Well, it's because he's that stupid that we're overthinking it.
It was that simple of a thing. And there, we got questions up on the screen right now, or we did for a second there. Let us know what you think there on the survey. What do you think is the most likely explanation in the Nancy Guthrie case? In the chat section, one, you can type your number here, one, they went to the wrong house. Two, it was a targeted attack. Three, the original plan went wrong, or for the crypto angle changes everything. Tell us which one you think it might be. And I could see it being a combination of some of those things as well. And if you think it's a combination, do that. And give us a little sentence there as to why you think it was what it may be. And if it's none of those, throw your own opinion up there in the chat. It's, I don't know. I mean, it is such a striking theory to me. I know it's been floating around out there. I don't know why I'm just now kind of diving into it. I think because at the beginning, there was so much noise and so much nonsense that wasn't true. I don't know if the gem guy thing was in my brain thrown into the bucket of a bunch of nonsense and noise, and that there is no gem guy. Turns out there is. Pretty verifiable, yeah, right there.
And I hadn't heard it until you had mentioned it.
Yeah.
But again, it fits nicely. Again, it's our own confirmation bias. Targeted for something in that house that wasn't found. And if you didn't find something in a house, why wouldn't it have been found in a house if they're targeting something? Well, because wrong house. So that kind of fits that narrative. And then when the narrative fits because of lots of gems next door, because again, everyone kept saying, these things are so tough because the information is so hard to verify because law enforcement saying nothing. And when they do say things, it makes no sense because everything is so challenging because of the lack of, and that's why all these theories keep coming out, because we're getting nothing from anyone on anything, which again means either they're completely incompetent, which I don't totally believe, or they're rapidly following up on the leads they do have and they think they're getting closer.
Well, I mean, it honestly keeps it very simple. If you just take the wrong house out of the equation, if they went to the right house, if this was, you know, a wrench attack, quote unquote, where everybody goes to the crypto thing, you can also do, a wrench attack is it's classified in the world of it's a wrench attack to get your crypto password. Yep. But you can do a wrench attack to get some gems. If somebody gets a wrench attack to get somebody to open their safe. Yep. That's essentially what that is. And if you got a lot of stuff in that safe, that wrench attack can be for that. It doesn't always, I guess, necessarily require a crypto component to it. It requires valuables being able to be obtained quickly and efficiently and without much trace through a threatening act, which may be a wrench. I don't know much about gem thieves. I don't know that there's really stats on gem thieves, but I don't know how sophisticated they might be. I'm sure some could be. You don't probably really need to be. This person didn't look all that sophisticated. They had a backpack that could likely hold a bit of stuff, probably a bunch of gems if they wanted to. Get in, get out. I don't know. I mean, I feel smoke there, but again, there's confirmation bias going on.
Well, there's smoke because nothing else is fitting. And it's not that this is fitting better or worse. It's fitting to me about the same.
I mean, 45 minutes in the house. Let's examine that angle of it under this prism of vision that we're looking through right now. 45 minutes, wrong house, looking for the gems. Nancy's there. It's not the gem guy house. What do you do? Is that a 45-minute time span that one would spend in that house in those moments?
Yeah. So when I looked this up at the very beginning, smash and grabs are a lot faster than this. Abductions are a lot faster than this. That's why the theory of not finding something at a house, that's why the delay inside is because nothing else fits the time frame. Generally, I think off the top of my head, I think it was anywhere between as quick as like 6 or 7 minutes and the longest is like 12 minutes for abducting someone or taking something from that house, which also, because I know nothing was taken from the house. Well, if you're looking for high value items in safes hidden someplace, or even just trying to do a wrench attack on her herself to give it up, you're not going to be paying attention to the petty stuff because you're going for the bigger grab.
There's new reporting that has come out over the weekend and this morning from the Daily Mail. I don't have the piece in front of me. I'm just going to try and give a quick synopsis of what they're reporting. It's that the second ransom letter was not a ransom letter, and it was an apology letter. Because Nancy died. Again, we can't confirm its legitimacy. We can't confirm anything, but that's what's being reported right now by the Daily Mail, and some other outlets are saying that too. If it was an apology letter, again, confirmation bias here, but it would play into this that the gem thief didn't intend to go kill anybody. The gem thief wanted gems, and everything went horribly, horribly wrong. If that's true, that plays into this angle even more of something that went horribly wrong. I guess, I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, but let's examine this as a whole for a second. How often do you get an apology letter when somebody gets kidnapped or you take the body or something goes horribly wrong? Sorry, we accidentally killed her. I don't want any money.
Yeah, without doing research, I'm going to say zero.
Yeah.
But it also
sounds nice, but
and I couldn't, I tried verifying that as well through credible sources. I couldn't do it. But if you look at, so here's a data point that I think supports that that may have happened. And that is the second thing that Savannah put out from her family was very empathetic. It was an empathetic appeal to whoever did this. And so this, if the apology is true, that's someone with empathy, because high level psychopathy where smashing grabs, abductions, you know, things where you're going to do harm to another human being and you don't give a rat's ass, that's high on psychopathy. Sending apology letters is very high on empathetic responses, which is hugely unusual, which again, then if you're looking at the timing of the second thing that Savannah and her family put out, it was very empathetic, you know, any way possible. But now I'm going to do my other side of this. Again, the whole purpose of I love this when we do this together with the audience. This is like, how do you critically think through things, you know, without taking a side? We live in the world of maybe when you don't have all the facts. So that's on the side of that's believable. But on reversal of that one more time is if there was more than one person involved and this one person has high levels of that empathy, the likelihood that they have other people in their lives at higher levels of empathy is really high as well. In other words, guilt would create leakage. And we haven't seen leakage that anyone's been able to follow. And even with no leakage from anyone else, then why not just let someone know where her body's at? If they're that guilt riddled and feel that bad, then why not? Or if you're listening now and you're the person that did it, just give up the body. There you go. Where is she?
Well, it tracks with the way that the Guthries responded, because really we were all going like, this is a weird response. This is very odd the way that this
wasn't transactional. It was empathetic. Yeah,
it was 1000% empathetic. It was about do the right thing. It was about it was not. I mean, it was like, well, pay if you want, but it was more like, you know, I don't want to say we forgive you because it wasn't that, but it was, hey, you know, okay, just do the right thing. Because they clearly, there was something that told them this person had empathy. And nothing that we've seen public facing has said that. So I'm assuming something that they've seen, some sort of communication that they believed was from the person, made them believe there was empathy. I mean, if we're talking and we can't verify, nobody can verify if in fact we're assuming the second letter, let's for a moment really believe that it was an apology of some sort, that Nancy went to go be with God. I believe it was part of the verbiage that was used in there. And I can say that I know that there was religious language used in in some of the letters. We do know that from sources, as a fact. That makes me really wonder if this is, you know, the one in a million where it's somebody really did have empathy, this went horribly wrong. But then it also makes me wonder, okay, no leakage. Did they take their own life afterwards too? Now that may be that this is complete conjecture, but that you have nobody that's come forward here. And did they take their own life, if they did, before telling anyone, before anybody else could come forward and say, hey, I know who did this. I don't know. My gut told me at the beginning, this guy's dead for different reasons. But this, I don't know, this would track even more. That the death part, the suicide part, that takes it to a different area. But it makes you wonder.
I think it lives in the realm of possibility. Because if it was someone that is empathetic, why wouldn't they continue? It's an interesting dichotomy battling in the brain of someone like this, because typically people with that much empathy aren't going to do things like this to begin with. Mm-hmm. Because if you have that much empathy, you're generally hitting higher on emotional intelligence. You're hitting higher on emotional intelligence means you're a little more functional in life to begin with. So you wouldn't have to do this to begin with. Unless there's some massively critical life challenge that you're facing, personally or someone close to your life that you think you need to do something like this to save a life? See what I mean? I mean, it gets,
yeah,
but we start going down rapidly complicated areas, which we just don't have any data on.
Well, didn't, I mean, look at it. Look at the statements from Savannah and the family through this light. It sounded like they were talking somebody off a ledge.
Yes, I agree.
And it didn't sound like they were negotiating with somebody who kidnapped their mom. It sounded like they were talking with somebody off a ledge who knew where Nancy's body would be.
I
was the only person who would know that. Yeah.
To me, the second thing that Nancy put out, I mean, that Savannah put out was all about giving someone, and we even said it back then, giving someone the grace to say, hey, we didn't intend this, just show us where the body is, let us know where she's at. And you could almost, you know, the person would know there'd be consequences for this if they're caught, but it wouldn't be from Savannah herself, because it did not sound like she wanted to get even. It didn't sound like, you know, the president even came out, you know, there'll be justice. Remember, there was like complete dichotomy between what Savannah was saying and what the president was saying. Two very different messaging. And that's because BAU was working with Savannah and her family on crafting those things. Because again, as these things work, is the family puts together what they think they want to say. And then based on the analysis of the information data they have, the BAU comes in, they craft, they work together, and this is what they put out. So it would stand to reason that that's why, because again, we've heard from people that they think that the first two were real ones.
Yeah.
And the second one was the more empathetic, I'm sorry one. Again, just reported, can't confirm it. It would make sense with the timing of everything we're seeing. But again, the leakage, lack of leakage of anything afterwards. Why? Well, if there's no one around to say anything anymore or want money or even to lead you to, like, that's the one that really gets me is like, an empathetic person at some point is going to drop enough breadcrumbs to lead investigators toward to where she's at, trying to cover their own bases to save themselves, or maybe not save themselves because they think they're culpable for it. Mm-hmm. Which again, this keeps yanking me back and forth because empathetic people don't do this, but they do this. They don't do this. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and look at cause and effect here. That's an interesting point you brought up with the BAU working on this. I mean, clearly they were. It was the messaging was very
good,
scripted. It was very targeted. Without a doubt, that's what was going on, that they were looking at communicating and trying to inspire this guy in some sort of a way to come forward. That I don't think that anybody would dispute that. And then the president does his verbal diarrhea of the mouth. And then suddenly there's no more communication because he says, we're going to fucking kill you. Oh, that inspired him for him to go underground or die or disappear so he doesn't get executed by the government while the BAU is carefully trying to craft this to get him to tell us at least where the body is. But then, motherfucker! Guess what? We don't know where Nancy is now. Thank you. Cause and effect.
You hate to think just one thing could cause it to derail, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, yeah. I mean, that I certainly didn't help the situation. That was not inspiring someone. And that's not a political statement. It's, I don't care who the fuck does that. I don't care what party you are. Whoever would have done that in that sort of a position, derail, could easily have a huge potential to derail all of that.
So the way I see things like this is it was incongruent with the messaging that was being put out.
Yes, regardless of who it is. Anybody who's doing that in a position like that, it's insane.
It was incongruent with what the thoughtful people that were part of the investigation were saying.
It was dangerous and destructive to an investigation. That's my nicer way of saying it. It is. It really is. I mean, that certainly didn't inspire anything. And that's
but like you're saying, though, I wouldn't be I would not be surprised if whoever did this, the porch guy, is no longer with us, just because I'm still really surprised. Again, unless law enforcement, they could know a lot more than we know on right now on the outside, and they actually have a very good idea of who he is, where he is, and what he's doing, and they just got to figure out a way to get at him if he's overseas and across a border someplace, or they have between a handful of people. I don't know, but I would so have expected someone that had that level of empathy to say, I'm sorry, this wasn't supposed to happen in any form or manner. I mean, I even had this on one of my cases. I actually had one of my investigations where I'm trying to recruit a high-level intelligence source from a foreign country, and I was doing a lot of undercover work to do it. And I brought him right to the meeting where he's meeting someone who's going to give some money for some information. And it caught him off guard more than I thought it was going to catch him off guard, because he was totally blindsided apparently by us. He tells his bosses about it. And he's told, in situations like this, you're told, break contact, never meet with these people again. Well, what he did was, instead of just breaking contact, he called me that night and said he wasn't allowed to call me anymore. That's someone who has a deep connection and was empathetic and felt bad, because I actually guilted him to meet me in the first place, because I said, what kind of friend do you think you are? Because you said you're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you never came. You never showed up. My wife's family felt stood up. Thanks a lot, buddy. So that's how, you know, you inspired someone to take action, because you're using empathy against them. Yeah, I hate these words too, because back then I had to use what's called strategic and tactical empathy, because he had it. He wasn't a narcissistic psychopathic spy. He actually had a family, cared deeply about them. He was trying to do the right thing. So in that case too, he called me to let me know he could no longer call me, instead of just silence. Same thing here. Highly empathetic individuals do this. People riddled with guilt do this.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating. I don't know. I feel like for the first time in a long time, maybe there's some direction here. Who knows? We'll continue to watch. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to break this down. Let's move over to another case that you guys have a lot of questions about, a lot of thoughts on. Rex Hierman pled guilty to 8 murders just the other week, sat across from Asa Alrup and told her he killed 7 of the 8 women in their basement. And there was an 8th too. Surprise! And in the very house that Asa still lives in, rather than moving away, rather than going, I can't set foot in this house again, knowing my husband did these things over the course of our life over the last 30 years. No, she thought this is a great way. This is an HGTV moment. Gut the basement. Pick up some Hello Kitty bedspreads over at the TJ Maxx and stuffed animals and set them up, make it a nice cozy little spot and sleep there. Then bring the documentary camera crew down to the basement to show just how cozy you made it. It's like trading spaces in hell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation on all of this. So here's one of these statements from our social media. Asa gutted the room where Rex said he dismembered 7 women, decorated with stuffed animals, moved in. She says it's spiritual. That's kind of how she positioned it in the doc. And I should say here too, quickly, we're not accusing Asa of doing anything illegal or being involved in the crime or anything like that. We're just saying this is creepy and weird. Listener says, I'm sorry. In what world is that a normal response to finding out your husband is the killer? Making a spiritual spot with Hello Kitty bedspreads in the kill room. Robin, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's not normal. No. And I'm going to do my best to channel our inner Siobhan Scott, who explains, I think, Rex and Asa exceptionally well and completely agree with all of it. No, normal people don't do that. And normal is also a word that requires definition. I'll just say healthy people don't do that. She has this complete inability to see Rex as anything other than her knight in shining armor, her savior, her Jesus figure. I don't care what you want to call it. She will not let go of that. And she made that downstairs a shrine to what she wants him to be, what she envisioned him as. And so that's what it's literally. She remade what his life was into what she always wanted it to be and has now wrapped herself around it. That's exactly what's going on. She has him captured in prison now, so he can't go around and killing prostitutes. She kept his boyhood home and boyhood room and made it into a boyhood room that she now sleeps in with the man that she adored her entire life. She's completely wrapped herself around in the fantasy she told herself but couldn't prove all these other years. She's now made it a reality.
When you say making it a shrine to him, because it's not like there's pictures of Rex up on the wall or anything like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean there has to be
a shrine. To how he made her feel.
A shrine, it's an emotional shrine.
Yeah.
And he made her feel essentially like a child, I think. I mean, because these are childhood things. I mean, these are children's toys. These are plushies and things that, you know, I win at Dave and Buster's for my daughter. You know, I mean, it's rather bizarre that a grown ass woman in her 50s or 60s is collecting that sort of, I mean, I guess it's not crazy, but is collecting that sort of thing in this sort of way. Does the fact that all of these things are so childish, does it say something that she didn't go to the local florist and fill it with bouquets and things that a 50, 60 some year old woman would fill their home with, not children's plushies? But she filled it with plushies. Does that say something about her cognitive level of thinking, that she went to childhood stuffed animals rather than, I guess, more of an appropriate comfort type things of someone her age in life?
Our greatest motivation as a human being is fear. And we want to feel safe. And so how that leaks out, and we can observe it, shows what that person needs to feel safe and no longer feel fear. I mean, so just think about, we all do this. It's just how the actions we take for ourselves to do that is where it varies based on our context, our experiences, our genetics, our nature versus nurture, the blend of them together. And so what she's doing to feel safe, again, her entire world of what she made herself believe, and she did make herself believe because she's, I don't think it was intentional. It's just how her brain worked with him. He saved her from the life that she was having. And so that he made her feel safe. And so in order for her to double down on a life that just got upended, her knight in shining armor is now behind bars. She dug deeper in the house because it's in the basement where it's even more insular from the world. She remodeled it to feel like a child again, whether she had those things growing up, her daughter had those things grow up. There's some sort of attachment to the visual stimulus she put down there that allows her to feel safer than she otherwise would have. You know, human beings abhor change, varying degrees, depend on who we are, because change is fearful, because change means things are unknown. As a species, we don't like the unknown because it doesn't allow us to feel safe. It keeps coming back to that same thing. All these things she's doing is letting her feel safe and empowered. And it's that childish, because that's when we go through traumatic events, our mental stops at that age. And so for whatever reason, that's at the age that she stopped mentally developing in these areas of, and so she just ratcheted right back down to that. And it's manifesting just like this in the world of creepy. But to her, it's just, it just makes total sense to her. This is just what I need to do to feel good. And now she's rapping it, and you can see her rapping words she thinks the world wants to hear because she's performative for the cameras. Oh, I'm doing it to honor the victims, to spirit. I mean, she's throwing words out there, but you see the lack of connection between the words and the emotion. I call that incongruency. That's why it feels a little creepy, because she doesn't actually feel that emotion. She thinks she's supposed to say that, but all the action she's taken is to feel safe, because she can't let go of the image she had of him, because that's the only thing I think that held her together.
It feels like she knows the world is looking at her, and in some way, shapes, and forms, the world wants her to feel those things of this pain and this suffering that her husband put these people through, because people want to villainize somebody, and somebody's got to pay for it in people's minds. And I'm not saying she does. If she had nothing to do with it, she's a victim as well. But that's what the world is looking at her as. And I would imagine if you're in that situation too, I mean, it's hard to contemplate that, but if you were, I think I would be riddled with guilt too if I discovered the person I loved and was not seeing doing this, even if the signs were there, but I was so distracted with whatever that I was unable to see it. I would probably be riddled with guilt too. Do you think, pure conjecture here, do you think she wants to feel it? Do you think she wants to feel, I don't want to say guilt, but feel something, feel the pain, simmer in the pain as a way to heal and experience the trauma of what all this is from a victim standpoint, more than the standpoint of being the wife of the killer? And I'm just wondering if she capably functionally doesn't have that ability. And sometimes when people are not capable of doing things emotionally, even if they want to, they go to extremes, cutting, things of that nature. We see this all the time, especially in young people, where people will do things to self-harm. I'm wondering if that's part of what the room is, if this is literally going to the source of the fire. Can you think of a worse place to set up a fucking bedroom? I can't. I mean, and she does. I'm wondering if this is her, okay, I'm going to go to the source of the flame, the hottest part, the blue flame, and I'm going to live in it. And maybe then I will feel what the world is telling me I should be feeling right now so I can go through it.
I don't think so.
But I don't know that she's capable. I don't know.
I don't think she's capable. I think she's very empathetic in her way. I don't think she's cognating that's something she needs to do. Remember, she used the word, she's trying to figure out what triggered him. Mm-hmm. And because she doesn't believe that her husband is this man. It's a darkness in him that gets triggered. And so part of, I think, this basement, as you're saying, this is what popped in my mind as well, is this basement is comforting for her, but it's also if she can remodel that bedroom to remove all the triggers that made him into the monster, then he'll no longer be that monster.
Or is she trying to figure, I don't know if she's deep enough for this. I don't read her as that.
I don't think she's thinking about the victims at all.
No, I wonder, is she living down there to try and see what inspired Rax? You know, like if she follows where he was, if she stays in the places he stayed, spends the time in the places he spent time, will she somehow better under, because she says in the doc, I want to better understand this version of Rex, this other side of Rex. And if she starts living the life of Rex, maybe she'll better understand that. Maybe being in that room. I wonder if it gets into some sort of a woo-woo territory here of, is she thinking like there's some sort of energy in that basement or, you know, possession type thing going on of like,
I think if she wanted to understand Rex, she would leave the room as is and live down there with the unaltered, because then she'd understand that the fact that she altered it. I still can come back to that. I think she's trying to save him still, you know, I think she's living in this fantasy world of reciprocity where she always viewed him as saving her. And now she's like, now it's my chance. I can save him. And I'm going to save him. I'm going to remove all the triggers that made him that bad person, because he's really not a bad person. He's just a family man. I mean, you've heard her rationalize all these things before. Yeah. Now you're just putting she's given us all the data points. Now you're just kind of understanding how those data points come together with really simple psychology. I want to feel safe. I want to save my knight in shining armor who saved me.
Yeah.
I'm so sad because I really wish she might. I just haven't seen anything from the docs that say, now she's trying to say the right words, but she is so in self-preservation mode. She's so in saving Rex mode. She's so in her own self-centered mode. She is not focusing on victims, at least my interpretation of what we're seeing.
I saw, this is an interesting comment here. She hates that the women got his attention and reclaimed their special room. I think that's
part of it too.
And I don't know that it's cognitive. I don't know that she's sitting there like literally thinking that out loud, but I think her emotions might be leading her there.
Yeah, I agree. Just think about this. In her mind right now, she finally has him as hers. I mean, hers. For the first time, it's only me. I'll tell you what, if he ever started getting fan mail from women in that prison and she found out about it, that'd be an interesting response by her, wouldn't it?
I'm sure he is, naturally. There's always people.
There are wackadoos out there, man.
Even a murderer like that? I mean...
Oh, yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And here's why, Todd, because it boggles the mind that people, I mean, Manson got them all the time. BTK gets them. All these serial killers, I guarantee you. I mean, Coburg has got a fan club, because what happens is that people that are feeling so disenfranchised, they feel so like no one cares about them. They just want to feel special. And if I can get someone like this to make me feel special, he wants me, even though he wants to be sadistic killer of me, it makes me feel special. That is a broken brain individual looking for attention, because we're looking for that attention. They just found sick ways to do it. And so people were, I guarantee you he's going to have at least a couple that don't believe he was guilty, believe he's a great guy. I also believe you're a great guy. I can be a great woman for you too.
Here's an interesting social experiment to do with the Huermans. And I'm not saying we should do it, and I'm not encouraging anyone to do it. But I'm saying it would be interesting. Cindy from Kalamazoo, Michigan, writes over to both Asa and Rex. He's mine. And she starts talking about her love for Rex. Cindy from Kalamazoo doesn't exist. But letters go to both places. So it's insured that Asa's aware Cindy's writing to Rex, and Rex is aware that there's communication going back and forth, which would then lead to them eventually having some sort of conversation about Cindy and Kalamazoo. And she'd want to find out what Rex's feelings are for Cindy and Kalamazoo, because Cindy and Kalamazoo seems to really think Rex is dandy. That would be interesting. And I think it's probably morally wrong to do something like that. I mean, not to Rex, but to her, because I do believe she's a victim in all of this. But
you'd be playing with her, but she'd be very susceptible to it. I think she'd get very defensive of her position as his wife. She'd be very defensive of it.
It would be, but I think it'd be somewhat cruel, but I almost think it'd be something that maybe should be done. I mean, honestly, for her own good, where it's like, maybe this will help you see him a little differently. And it'd be painful. It would go against her own narrative of what she believes, but she needs that if she's going to live a healthy life in any way, shape, or form. But I think maybe we've already, sailed away from that dock a long time ago.
I could see this playing out where remember, we talked about this with Siobhan. She is his really only real lifeline to the outside world, where she is going to be taking care of him, in mm-hmm. as much as she can through his commissary, through correspondence. She became a gatekeeper of his, where, because he knows she only sees him as this great guy. And so I would imagine a world where he would not entertain, because what would he get out of it? Correspondence coming in from some other woman. So he'd probably let her know, because if he let her know, it maintains his control over her, because she'll trust him. And then it puts her in the driver's seat of any correspondence with anyone trying to do that to begin with. I think it'd be very cruel, because I think she would be responsive to it, because mm-hmm. she would. You can imagine her saying things like, you could never be woman enough like me to take care of my husband like I do. I mean, something yeah. around those lines, because now she has complete. She's got him for the first time in her life. Undivided attention. And I don't think that because he's using her as a very effective screwdriver right now on the outside, unless someone could come in with another better offer that could give him, because again, anything that comes in and out is public knowledge. And so mm-hmm. she could ultimately find out about it, which would undermine him and his control of information. I don't see him responding to anyone except her.
At the end of the day here, maybe if the only thing that's left here, and if she's not going to choose to better her life and to, it's nobody else's job but hers to do that for herself.
It's her path.
It's her path. And if the public interest, the human interest outside of this is to find out if there's more victims that he's responsible of, maybe keeping her and maybe allowing her to live in this delusional land is the best thing to get those answers.
Yeah. I think if there's ever going to be leakage, potential leakage, it will happen with someone in the BAU interviewing him, who's going to be able to piece together an evolving methodology for different locations, potentially for, outside of New York. And then any leakage that she, so if she would be responsive to talking to the BAU as well during his interview process, so they could actually, I wouldn't say play them against each other, but direct her to have conversations after the conversation the BAU had with him. There'd be easy follow-up through her that they could actually maybe get a little bit more leakage. Like if they talked about, you know, the methodology evolving with him and then scripted her about, hey, when I was down in so-and-so, did you ever do anything down there? In other words, try to link the two together to see what kind of data points that he wouldn't want to tell the BAU when being interviewed by them, but might be more, a little more acquiescing. Because if she then tied her ability to help him by having good conversations with him because it makes her feel good and that's his only access to the outside, but in order to do it, he's got to be a little more revealing about, you know, like her saying, I would just want to get to know that other side and how it got triggered. How did it get triggered in South Carolina when I was there? You know, so that's how you could play the two together. That's what I'd be doing.
Use her as a key, use her as a tool, if you will. A very, like one of those odd tools you find at like Harbor Freight and you're like, what the hell is this? What would you use this for? It's like one strange use. She's that, or a key. And she's the only one that's going to be able to unlock Rex the way that he needs to be unlocked. It's in the best interest of her not cutting all ties in communication with him if they're in the best interest of getting to that data, information.
Boy, we're going down such a rabbit hole in this one. But, you know, if she did this and the BAU worked with, and they got permission to do it, and it's ethical, to work with her psychologist, this actually would be a path to her finally seeing him for who he is. Because if she is the one that they're asking her and she's willing to give help to help uncover potential of their lives, because it seems like she wants to do the right thing. She's just incapable of knowing what that is outside of herself. This actually could help her see that, because she's actually part of the process of strategically interviewing him for him to disclose more than he already admitted to. That could, because she's in part of that process and she's not a bystander of it, I'd be very interesting to see what her therapist would think about that.
Yeah, I would too.
Good question for Stefan next week.
Yes, it very much is. We'll have to discuss that. We're going to be talking about Maternal Instinct on Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God, the horrible one. Oh, my God.
I started rewatching that this morning and taking notes. Don't do that. I'm like, I have my notes, but I'm like, I'm going to watch this again. And I have many more. It'll be a fascinating conversation. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Another case that's still getting a lot of comments here, and since we're doing Q&A this morning, drop them. The Crash, Mackenzie Shirilla, two boys are dead. Dominic Russo was 20, Davion Flanagan, 19. Mackenzie Shirilla drove 100 miles an hour into a brick wall, and a judge called her literal hell on wheels. But our audience isn't just asking about Mackenzie anymore. Netflix, of course, put the parents on camera. The prison calls are public. The question that keeps coming back isn't about guilt. It's about who spent 17 years building the person who got behind that wheel. And a lot of your questions are focused on the parents. We've talked about the parents in depth, but we'll do another round of it right here. Feel free to drop them into the comment section wherever you're watching us on the live right now, or if you're watching the replay, go ahead and drop them. This conversation is far from over. Robin Dreeke, of course, with us, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's go with this one. Steve Shirilla went on Netflix and said he didn't have a problem with his daughter smoking weed. He said, if you're going to smoke a drug, that's the one you should take. He was teaching at a Catholic elementary school. And I think the thing that everyone goes to, how do you say that on camera and not see what happens next? Dawn on YouTube had that one. Because I don't think he makes good decisions. And that's the answer. Robin?
It just says it all right there. I mean, his lack of understanding of cause and effect in any aspect of life, it's just such a supreme arrogance to think that you're smarter and better than absolutely everyone around you, the people that employ you, the police, the public, you name it. You know, that is a person living in a huge self-centered, self-righteous methodology. And so what do our kids learn? Our kids learn from our behaviors how to interact with the world around us. And if your daughter thinks you're a successful person because X, Y, and Z, they're going to do exactly the same behaviors that you do because they think it's a successful path in life. And it's that's why the adage, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So that was just, again, emotional intelligence. Part of emotional intelligence is understanding our impact on others and how that affects them. And this person is completely oblivious to what cultural and societal and norms at the place that employs you expect you to do.
Another thing with that, I want to add in where he talked in the doc about when she was being abhorrent to the school staff, saying horrible things to her teachers, being extremely disrespectful. I mean, just you can't do that in school. And the school, they call her out. She's at the principal's office. He shows up and he says basically, and I looked at her and asked her, did you do it? And she said, no. And I said, come on, let's go. And I picked her up and we got out of there because I know she didn't lie. Despite the school staff all like, this is the shit your daughter just pulled. He's not holding her accountable in any way, shape, or form, going, I believe leave you and going with it. I mean, what is that? Is that narcissism? Because narcissists so often see their children as extensions of themselves, not as their own individual people. And if this is how, if he sees himself as kind of being, I can break the rules and kind of do what I want to do, he's going to view her the same sort of way as the extension of himself and not accepting the consequences to any sort of actions. I'm wondering if that says more about him, not wanting to accept reality, accept consequences that come along with having a daughter that's out of control, because that would mean his parenting is out of control. And that's how, rather than deal with it, it's just, nope, not true. Walk away.
That's just an ego out of control. That is a massively inflated self, sense of self, which again, sense of self, understanding of self, that is emotional intelligence. He is bottoming out on EQ. He's got zero because think about it. There's five elements that make up someone's emotional intelligence: our knowledge of self, our knowledge of others, our impact on others, problem solving capabilities, and how we handle stress and decision making. Think about all those five factors. Where's he at on all of them? Zero. but that's that huge self-centered ego. That was made by someone as well. His arc in his life would be really interesting to look at. And here's where it becomes a massive problem. His loving critic, his wife, feeds it.
Yeah. You know, they all feed it. It's like it's a toxic swamp. It is.
And that's why when you hear and listen to all the prison calls, it's a family maelstrom of self-centered chaos. Because they keep feeding each other. There's no loving critic that says, hey, maybe you should take a breath. Maybe go out and walk and touch some grass because you all are so full of shit that you're believing it. And they all have fallen in love with their own voice. They all think everyone else in the world is out to get them. They're total 100% victim mentality because in their own world, there is no other victim but them. That's why they're incapable of showing any sort of remorse except just words. No emotion, again, that incongruence between words, actions, and deeds that gives you that creepy something's off feeling is because they don't feel what they're saying when they even say anything regarding the victim's families and the loss of life that their daughter caused. She's the victim. They're coming after her. They're coming after us. Shame on them. We can now be life coaches because we understand how life works. What the fucking hell? You are. Yeah. These are, you know. My sidebar, and if anyone's ever wondering if we're living in some sort of simulation, this is proof we might be, because this can't be real. These people are a program. How can this human being even exist in this world? They're such nutters.
I 1000% agree. What is your take on this, Robin, like from a behavioral standpoint? And I'm curious, have you seen this, you know, in your professional work? The family developed their own secret language to communicate. I remember the first time I heard the 911 or not that I'm the prison calls between mom and Mackenzie. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I thought like the audio was off. I thought I was having a stroke for a second. I'm like, what are they saying? I can't understand a word that's being said. And it's like, oh, they're speaking in like pig Latin or something. But it's like their own little, you know, Cyrillic language that they came up with to get around monitoring. Well, prosecutors figured it out because, surprise, surprise, the fake language that Mackenzie Shirilla and mom figure out is not that hard to decode. Turns out it doesn't need like a Nazi box to get through. What do you make of that? The fact that they made up a fake language to try and get around monitoring on a recorded line.
So,
sorry. That's weird.
Well, you just got, so here's how my brain works on these things. Well, that's not the first time they did that. So
yeah,
what caused them to do this many years ago?
Yeah, good question.
They have been talking shit around other people their entire lives. As a matter of fact, they probably got caught at one point talking their shit about people and they got called out on it. So what did they do? They came up with a way to talk shit around people and no one understood what the hell they're saying. So they could keep talking shit. That's exactly what that is.
And, that is that.
And when you combine that with some, you know, because you hear twins sometimes when twins develop their own language because they're so closely bonded, you know, so people want to feel special. They want to feel closer. We're going to have our own special language. And our own special language is for what? It's not for love. It's so we can talk shit about you right in front of your face and you have no idea what we're saying. I mean, it's, again, fall in love. They fell so in love with their own voice. They made up their own voice.
That's true. God, it's just, yeah, welcome to the simulation.
It didn't just happen. Things like that just don't happen. It happens on an arc. No one says, all right, I'm going to prison. Oh, shit, we got to quickly develop our own language so we can talk behind people's back on an open line. No, it's been done for years. I really wonder the first time they came up with this idea. You know, this mouthy little group that thinks they're better than everyone else was talking shit all the time, because it's what everyone at school said what a bully she is. Everyone at school says how mouthy she is. Where do you think that came from? It just didn't pop out of her mouth one day. Her mother and her have been talking shit about everyone their entire lives, and they had to come up with their own language because they couldn't control themselves in public spaces. That's why they did it.
God.
And they're still doing it because prison's a public space and they're still doing it. They're incapable.
And I guess it's so fascinating because it's about as stupid as going at 100 miles an hour into a brick wall. Doing this on a recorded line, the fact like there's no thought of consequence. There's like no equation that someone is going to look at this and go, what the F was that? Like, and then figure it out. It's almost as if I'm going to do this and no one is going to be the wiser, no matter what. Yet everyone keeps being the wiser. I'd love to know more of the history of this family and their social interactions with society, because I can only imagine the horror stories and the tornado of life that all three of these people have been to anyone unfortunate enough to have crossed their paths.
Well, you know what they are, because the dad said it right on camera. You know, he can say whatever he wants because I'm smarter than everyone else. And she's doing exactly the same thing. And so she picked it up from him because he thinks he's smarter than everyone else. You know, regardless of what school rules, school policy or anything else is, I think it's okay for my daughter to smoke pot. And you know what? I don't care if I'm teaching elementary school at your school. I'm smarter than you. You can't fire me. Oh, shit. You fired me? Huh. I'm still smarter than you. Screw you. I mean, see what I mean?
It's so, yeah. I mean, it really is quite simple at the end of the day.
They're idiots.
This is a case where, yeah, it's all it is. It's a family of self-centered narcissists, and this is what you grow. It's a family of weeds.
They grew her.
Yeah.
It's a family of weeds. There you go. I like that.
It is. It's a family of weeds. It's like you have your garden spots, like, there's flowers growing here. Like, oh, it's a bunch of shitty weeds.
And here's, now going back to the thing that really matters, and that's the victims. You saw, again, we only saw what we saw on the special on Netflix. You saw Dom and his entire family recognizing, get away, get away, get away. I mean, yeah. I've had my own family members, you know, deal with some really crazy people. And you're like, dude, we don't do crazy. You know, that's literally the phrase in our family all the time. We don't do crazy. I don't do crazy people. And crazy is that when I see a wobble of something deviating from the norm baseline of what you would expect healthy people to do. I mean, Tony, we're friends, you know, Todd, all of us, you know, we just stayed the fuck away from crazy.
Yeah.
And he was trying to, but she had the levers, man. She was using, again, this is how this whole thing happened. She used that lever of fear. She discovered I can scare the shit out of people into doing what I want in that car.
Mm-hmm.
Until she decided to go way too far and kill them all, except for herself.
And unfortunately, the reality is empathetic people are quite often drawn into crazy because
they think they can save it.
They're trying to save it. They're trying to help it.
Yep.
I've had my own track record of that.
Yep.
Relationships. And thank God I'm not into that anymore.
I'm allergic to stupid too, yeah, Kay.
But I get it. I mean, I get it. But having, once I got some reps in that, once I had reps in experiencing the crazy, you're like, because I think a lot of empathetic people don't realize the depths as to just how crazy some people can be, unless you're a big fan of true crime or have lived a little bit of life.
Well, and also when you start getting healthier people around you, so the difference in feeling you have, I mean, just look at our friendship, you know, our crew here at Hidden Killers. We are a great, wholesome, empathetic group. And when you have that, now that you have a contrast between what you thought was love, caring, compared mm-hmm. to this, you're like, holy shit. You can recognize it so far out because it's way out there. You see a wobble way out, 1,000 miles in distance, man. It doesn't even cross your mind anywhere. So far out there. And as people start walking towards it, you can say, hey, no, don't go over there. It's Nutterville mm-hmm. over there. You just grab them. You know, here's our society right here. Don't go near crazy. But you only know it if you have context. Again, everything's a dichotomy. Crazy and nutters and non-crazy. And so you only know it if you experience it.
I agree, because it creates that baseline of what is normal and what is not. Once you start saying it, we're going to do a merch store very soon, by the way. I said, I think I don't do crazy would be a good shirt along with nutterers. You know, maybe like one each side. I don't know. I just thought of that as we were talking.
And don't be an abhorrent, abhorrent conglomeration of DNA goo or whatever it was.
We'll have to go back and get that made up. I can only imagine the graphic we can make for that.
A bucket of goo is all you are, man. You're just a bucket of abhorrent DNA.
Of rejected. Well,
all because I refuse to call you a human being.
I love
it. You just don't rate.
All right. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening right now. We'd love for you to weigh in and be sure to press subscribe wherever it is you're listening or watching, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever it may be. Hit subscribe so you don't miss anything and take us along with you. Also, Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It is available wherever you get books. Leave a review for this on Amazon or Audible or wherever you're getting it. Very much appreciated.
And thank you for joining me in my camper. I'll be in here all week long. We're visiting my son, and that's why I wore my Bucky's t-shirt. We stopped on the way down. We're down in South Kekalake.
Have you tried any of the food at the Bucky's? Have you gone in and experienced the gourmet delights of the Bucky's?
So yes, my wife is a lover of all things sugar, so we do always have fudge that we pick up from mm-hmm. there. I got a brisket taco that's actually sitting in the fridge because I eat pretty healthy, pretty healthy, and so I'll only have like I'm one of these annoying people. I'll have like a bite or two and I'll put it back in the fridge for a couple days.
in moderation there. They have delicious, the Bucky's nuggets are pretty good.
Yes,
the little like corn puff things. Yeah.
Yes, I do like Bucky's nuggets. Definitely Bucky's nuggets. Because yes, so here's a sad thing, sad and great thing. So I live in an area. I live in Virginia, mm-hmm. Northern Virginia, and we literally have a brand new Bucky's going in about 10 miles from my house.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
lucky. Not a lot of people do.
So I live right in between. We got a new water park that's going in Kalahari, just south of us, and we got Bucky's going in just north of us. And so we got a great destination video.
Kalahari is pretty amazing. I know the people who own that started in Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah.
I did a video years ago on another podcast, another show called The Taste Spot. Went around, did travel and food videos, and did a weekend at Kalahari in the Dells. Amazing place and really nice. I don't know if the family still owns it or if it's
they
expanded
do. It's
out.
Still the family. Actually, I'm friends with the guy who's now the chief of security there. So here's what we got to do. We got to get Crime Con so that we might entertain
someplace fun.
Get like CrimeCon and go to Kalahari. I might show up now.
Do it at a water park. Yeah, I think that would be a fun place for it. I go if it was at a Kalahari. I would totally do that. All right, there you go. It wasn't an advertisement for Buc-ee's in Kalahari, but in case you're wanting a great vacation,
keeping it real.
You can hit a Buc-ee's and a Kalahari close to Robin now. So that's right. There you go. All right, your thoughts, like I said, in the comments. We will talk again soon. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, and myself, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.